you're interested in leadership and you want to lead as your most authentic self, this is the podcast for you. This is a show that breaks down the concept that leadership is complicated. Well, I'm going to let you in on a secret. It's not. I believe that it's an exchange of energy between two people. I want to create conversations for emerging and experienced leaders to come together and discover a new way to lead from the inside out. You already have everything that you need to be an exceptional leader. What we will uncover is the power of human connection and understanding how we are hardwired to seek out a true sense of belonging. So come join me. Let's create a community of leaders that are ready to challenge the status quo and who value human connections more than bottom lines. Welcome back, everyone. Today, I'm very honored to welcome our guest, Angie Alexander. But before we get started, I'd like to properly introduce Angie. Angie is a professional engineer, leadership and team effectiveness consultant, and a certified mental fitness coach. After over 20 years in the oil and gas industry in Alberta, she realized that her technical background, combined with her people-oriented approach to working with leaders and their teams, was her superpower. She loves nothing more than to support, encourage, lift up, and help people to be their best professional selves. She is an empathetic coach and facilitator who loves to support technical professionals, leaders, and teams work better together. Angie has skills in leadership development, mental fitness coaching, organizational effectiveness, facilitation, process design and improvement, change management, and project management. She possesses a passion for bringing teams together to work more effectively, make better decisions, be more innovative, and think more strategically. Welcome to the podcast, Angie.
Michelle, I'm so excited to be here.
I am too. This is one of my favorite episodes for everyone who's listening, just because Angie and I have known each other for 2 or 3 years now. Is that how long it's been?
Yeah.
We met on Clubhouse, and we are in a weekly kind of chat group. Someone in our group yesterday called it a mastermind, which I was like, whoa, that's like very fancy. And I'm very flattered by that. But it's my favorite part of the week. It's Thursday mornings on Clubhouse. And Angie is the moderator of an amazing group where we talk about all things leadership and often get into some really juicy conversations that lead over several weeks, because it's such a great spot to be. So if you're on Clubhouse, you should come join us. But yeah, I feel like Angie and I are virtual friends, and I'm really honored and excited that you're here this morning. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Michelle. I'm equally excited. Like I said, it's been a couple of years of these wonderful conversations, and someday we'll meet in person. Now that we get to meet on Zoom and do a podcast together, I'm really honored and excited to be here.
I know. I was saying to my husband the other day, I'm like, I don't know why it took me so long to make the connection to invite Angie. Like and then I thought, gosh, I hope she wasn't waiting for an invite and would have just said to me like, hey, I'm right here. This is like super obvious. You should have me as a guest. But so things happen, I guess, when they're supposed to. And today is going to be a great conversation. I obviously know a ton about you, but I know that our listeners probably haven't had that opportunity to do that. So I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about yourself and what has led you up to doing the work that you're doing now.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. And my bio gives a little hint of kind of my background and where I've come and where I've landed. But I'm born and raised here in Calgary. And my dad was in oil and gas my whole growing up years. And I watched him go through a lot of ups and downs in oil and gas. So I said, you know, I want to get out of Calgary. I don't want to be in oil and gas. And so I went across the country to Montreal to go to university. I took engineering because, you know, it was just one of those, you're good at math, you're good at physics. You might as well do something with that. Actually, I wanted to be a doctor. That was the original plan. And then I dated an engineer one summer and was opened up to that piece of things. So there was a smidge of like, what is it that you really want to do with your life at that time? But I realize now I just did what made sense. Nobody questioned it. Nobody asked me like, well, why do you want to be an engineer? So I did engineering. There was a lot of really good things about engineering. And again, reflecting back on where I am today, I was very fortunate to be in a very collaborative environment. There were not a lot of women in engineering, but I landed with a really strong group of women and had very close friends all the way through my engineering schooling, which is was fabulous, and not everyone has that experience. And then I got sucked back to Calgary in oil and gas for a summer job. And you know, when they offer to pay you well and fly you home and all of those things, you do it, right? And then and that's just where I ended up. When I graduated in the early 90s, there were not a lot of jobs anywhere. Manufacturing was big in the east where I was, not a lot of jobs there. So I ended up back here in Calgary in oil and gas. And I can't complain. I had a really amazing career, you know, over 20 years total of technical engineering work. And then I got pulled in a lot into kind of people-oriented type work. At a young age, I was put in kind of that project management role, interfacing with clients and supporting the team back in the in our office. And so, you know, I always was really fascinated with how people thought, how their different technical skills and language come together to make decisions to present to clients. That was something that, again, looking back, I realized was a bit of a superpower that I had in terms of personality-wise. I got along with everybody. I, you know, smart enough to bring everybody's thoughts together into a package to present upwards or across. I think there was a lot of times where I felt like I didn't know the answers, and I was kind of there was a lack of confidence with that. So I would ask lots of questions, right? I would talk to a lot of people and gather a lot of information. I always felt like I wasn't smart enough to have the information to make a decision. And again, looking back, the ability to go and ask a lot of questions and package it all up and bring it back together was actually very smart, right? Very clever on my end, but I didn't recognize that it wasn't valued. So then over the years, I moved around companies, and I eventually landed back at a company that I had started with years before. And was put into these roles that were very much about bringing groups together and having the right conversations to make good decisions, having conversations around technically complex, but also people complex. We have a lot of stakeholders that we didn't have when I first started in oil and gas. We could just go out and drill wells and tie them in. And now we need to talk to a lot more people. There's a lot more upfront permitting, as you know, you're aware of, you know, a lot of the Indigenous communities that we need to speak with, the permitting and all of those things. So found myself like doing that kind of work. And then we started going through layoffs through starting in about 2014. The industry just really had a rough go. And so fast forward to 2017, I had been moved into a really cool role that the organizational effectiveness role, which at first was like, why am I being moved from a technical space into human resources, into HR? And now I'm an organizational effectiveness advisor, and I didn't know what that meant. And then I figured it out, and I was like, this is amazing. This is like, I won the lottery. I'm finally where I belong. I'm working with the most senior level of the organization. I wouldn't have called it coaching, but I was coaching a lot of senior leaders. I was helping them figure out how to bring their teams back together after a reorganization multiple times. And it was amazing. And I was like, this is it. This is I finally landed where I'm meant to be. And then I got laid off. So that was fun. So 2017, I got laid off. And you know, it was, in hindsight, one of the best things that's ever happened to me. You know, I had it was a there's I mean, there's lots of stories I can tell about even that 4 month window where I knew I was getting laid off but not finishing until 4 months later. But it was that opportunity, and in the mental fitness world, we call it, you know, there's a gift in something that happens that's not great. And the gift was that it really forced me to look internally and figure out what I really wanted to be when I grow up. And so since then, I've been finding my way through this leadership development. Mental fitness coaching came my way. I have a real passion and desire to help bring a different kind of leadership. This is where you and I connect so well, a different kind of leadership to the oil and gas industry, to, you know, to our country, just in general. How can we lead from a place that's less command and control and more empathetic, more curious, more purpose-driven, people first, really. And yeah, so that kind of brings me to today. And during the pandemic, I discovered the positive intelligence, we call it PQ coaching. I did a program that was offered to me as a coach. It was transformative for me. And at the end of the program, I thought, I need to do this with this is the missing link for me with my clients and particularly leaders and teams. How can I bring this to them to help them? You know, it makes all the work that we do with leaders sticky. You know, it's like cleaning out our operating system. It certainly was a different way for me to look at my life and how I'm operating. So, yeah, that was a pretty long-winded way to get to where I am today.
No, I love it.
So,
And because I
yeah.
think I've said this so many times before that I think that when I read people's bios before they come onto the podcast, I often think, oh, that's so interesting. I wonder how they got from A to B. But then when they tell the story, I'm like, well, that's actually not a stretch at all. It's very clear that progression in that one position that you got where you realized you had won the lottery was actually just sort of the beginning of dipping your toe in the water of kind of where you are now. And so, I think it's a wonderful example that sometimes we land exactly where we're supposed to be, but it's such a stretch from where we thought we were that we don't make that connection. And I know I had never heard of PQ before I started, coming to your clubhouse rooms and learning more about it. And while I have never taken the training, although I'm looking at doing some in 2024, it really aligns with me because I think to your point, where you and I are very much aligned is in wanting to help support leaders to create workplaces that people feel that they are valued and that they are seen and heard, and really in the truest sense of feeling safe and that they can trust their leader to make good decisions on their behalf and that they're part of the decision-making process. And also, that we have all of these internal dialogues that are going on the inside. And so to have a leader who can not only support themselves, but recognize that when they're struggling, others are likely struggling with those same voices that we have, that they can support in a very unique and different way. And I love that because I think it's sort of the next generation of leadership that people are not resonating with old styles of leadership, I find in a lot of workplaces now. And so we're just giving people, other options to consider as part of how they venture out into the world and lead others. So I'm really excited for you to share with us what positive intelligence is. You know me, I've said this before on your clubhouse rooms that I nerd out on, the data and the information. So I thought a good place for everyone to start is for you to tell us what positive intelligence actually is and how it specifically would relate to leadership and the personal development, I think is obvious, but how it ties into the leadership piece specifically.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. So for those that are not familiar with positive intelligence, there's a book that came out, I think, in 2012. The author is Shehrzad Shamin, and I'm sure Michelle put all this in the show notes at the end to be able to find. So Shehrzad has taken but it's not new research. He's taken a bunch of research around cognitive psychology, performance science, neuroscience, and there's one other one, and I can't remember it off the top of my head. Brought a bunch of research together, and then found a way. He's kind of distilled it down. This is where, as an engineer, I love this. Like, what are the three factors that are the common, that come out of all of this research in terms of performance? And he called it mental fitness. So the analogy, the example is, when we talk about colors, all the colors in the world distill down to th the three primary colors, right? So within the mental fitness space, which is where he's taken all this different science around the brain to come up with what he calls mental fitness. And the definition of mental fitness is our ability to take on life's challenges from a more positive versus negative mindset. And it comes down to there being three core muscles. And this is what I love, right? It's this fitness analogy of how can we build up our core muscles to be stronger mentally? So our mental fitness helps us be healthier, mentally healthier, as well as kind of move out of that place of meh and blah and languishing, like Adam Grant talks about, into a more thriving environment. So the three core muscles are what we call the first one's called the saboteur interceptor. So we hear about saboteurs are those, and you alluded to it, Michelle, that those negative voices that kind of chatter away in our head. They tell us, we're not worthy. They create that lack of confidence that I talked about. I realize now I have this strong judge character that likes to tell me I'm not as smart as other people, and not good enough. Those voices that play that really get in your way create all the negative emotions we have. So by simply acknowledging and recognizing those voices, that's building the first of the three core muscles, saboteur, interceptor. So we learn to recognize who they are, and everyone has a slightly different cast of characters in their head. So there's an assessment you can do to discover who those are. So by starting to recognize them, we're building our core muscles. We want to shift from that saboteur place into what we call sage. And when we're in our sage brain, we're building our sage muscles. And the sage is, I think of it as that inner essence of who we truly are. If we think about the word sage as being wise, we all have access to these powers that make us more sage, things like empathy and curiosity and creativity, all of these things, and our ability to really tap into our purpose, all of that are our sage muscles. So as we work on and focus on building and using those powers, we're building our sage muscle, which is one of our core muscles. And I think for me, the like secret sauce around cognitive intelligence, because I think about, I knew I had, maybe not, I couldn't name saboteurs, but I knew I had this negative bias towards things sometimes. We've heard it called imposter syndrome. We've heard it called the inner critic. We all have these, we know that we're feeling this way. And at the same time, we know we should be, there's that word should, right? We should be more positive. But, Angie, you have no reason to like have lack of confidence. Look how smart you are. Look at your grades. Look at your success in your career. All of these things. But connecting that negative side, that negative inner chatter with what I should know and that I should be confident, there's a missing link there somewhere, right? And so you can move yourself a certain amount by reading books, listening to podcasts, putting those sticky affirmations up on your mirror, I am worthy, and all of those things. And there was something missing for me, and I see this with clients too. So this is where Shahrzad's brilliance comes in. He has done some work to find that if you go into your physical body, even just 10 seconds at a time, you start to rewire your brain, right? The neuroplasticity, which we know now our brains can actually rewire. So I practice going into my body, and it's everything from those breathing exercises, just take a few deep breaths. The one that most people know is, and your listeners won't hear this, but if you just take two fingertips and rub them together and really focus on feeling the ridges on both fingers for 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, you are firing up a different side of your brain than if you're in your negative side of your brain. It fires up the positive side of your brain. So there's a whole series of those going into your physical body, the tactile feeling. I like to put my feet flat on the floor and feel my toes. It could be listening if you're outside and listening to different sounds, looking at, even as I'm looking at Michelle on the screen, I'm taking in, the color of her hair, the shape of her eyebrows, the color and the texture of her shirt that she's wearing. All of those things are firing up that side of my brain. So we're learning in really small instances to be able to rewire our brain. It's similar. A lot of people will say, well, isn't that just like meditation, Angie? And meditation is absolutely a kind of, we call these PQ reps. So PQ, positive intelligence. It's like going to the gym, lifting 5 pound weights, 2 pound weights. We're doing that. And we don't have to find 20 minutes, half an hour to sit and meditate in a dark room with it being quiet and a comfy cushion and all those things, which are fabulous for you. This helps you in the moment at the time. So let's just go through those three steps. Saboteur, interceptor. I know I'm being hijacked. We use the word hijacked or sabotaged by my saboteurs. I can feel it. I know something's going on. I want to shift into that sage place. I know I'm supposed to be there. How do I do that? If I can take that moment, pause, feel my feet on the floor, take a couple of breaths, maybe rub my fingertips together, whatever that is that for me, and we work, I work with clients to figure out which ones are their favorites. And then they shift. It's like shifting out of that high hijack state into a neutral sage state. And then now I can start flexing those sage muscles. So it takes practice. Like, going to the gym. You don't go to the gym and start lifting 100-pound weights right away, or you don't go and run a marathon right away. You train, right? You start practicing, you use you do a little a day, and you start to build up your muscles. So that's really what positive intelligence is. It's training our mental core muscles how to shift us out of a negative mindset and more into a positive mindset. So it's not about being like toxic positivity, right? It's not all about
Right.
everything is Pollyanna positive. Come on, everything's going to be fine. It's really being able to shift the lens to look for opportunities, to look for ways, look in a different perspective at things that when we're all hijacked, we just can't see, right? We're very, we're angry, we're frustrated, we feel guilty, we feel shame, all of those things, to shift out of that and be able to look at whatever's in front of us from a more positive way.
Yeah. And I would think that when someone's first learning how to flex these muscles, it's the just bringing the awareness to the fact that you're having that experience, that your saboteur or whatever one it is has come up. And why is it showing up? Is it there because this is a habit that has always come up before? Is it there because you think you need protection somehow? Like, I would think that that would bring up just a ton of questions to help you then continue to ask yourself the deeper questions to learn how to, like you said, flex that muscle so that you can start lifting a little heavier weight. I'm curious, and I love the example of just rubbing your fingers together. I know I love these little things. I had mentioned one time to you that I had learned, I don't know, about a year ago, when someone had put hard candies on a table at a conference, that when you suck on a hard candy, that actually helps to bring back a reflex that we had when we were infants and we would suckle, and we lose that reflex and we no longer need to soothe ourselves or to suck from a bottle. We never actually lose it. We just forget that it's there. And so when we can suck, we get that same mechanism, which actually will bring us into a more soothed state. And I know that we've talked about this on your club in your clubhouse room around creating sort of emotional regulation. And so I'm sort of hearing that these three muscles help you sort of get to maybe a place of emotional regulation. I'm wondering how you can explain to us how PQ will help someone lead others better. I mean, it seems obvious to me, and I don't mean for that to sound like I'm like, well, it's so obvious. But I think that when I've heard you talk about this so much, that I know that I'm now coming from a lens where I'm a little further down the runway than other people. So for people who might just be hearing this for the first time and aren't quite making that connection, how would flexing these muscles and having the awareness of this process help them lead others better?
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. Such a great question. And I think so many times we often, and I worked with leaders, and I know you probably have too, leaders will come and say, I need to fix my team, or some version of that, right? Like, my team is having trust issues. My team is not communicating very well. Help me fix my team. And the reality is, we need to start with the leader, right? The leader is setting the tone. The leader is at least partly, if not fully, responsible for the culture within their team or their organization. So starting with the leader themselves and looking at, okay, how are you showing up with your team? And having this language of the different saboteurs, and how they show up for you as a leader. And we talk a lot too about leaders don't have to be just in an organization and a team, right? As parents, we're leaders. In friend groups or in community groups, we're leaders. But let's keep it sort of focused in the corporate world. So for example, if I have a saboteur called controller, so most of the saboteurs have names that make complete sense to all of us, right? So a controller saboteur is going to be that one that tries to control absolutely everything in our lives, right? So, I mean, we know as coaches, we're often coaching people, focus on what you can control, and step back from what you can't control. So learning that controller saboteur just completely wants to control everything. So a leader that might be described as a micromanager probably has a pretty strong controller saboteur in their little cast of characters. And so they're trying to control everything. They're micromanaging. They're telling people what to do. They get frustrated when they don't do it the way that they would do it. They try to help them, and I'm doing air quotes. They're trying to help them do things better. And if we ask a leader like that to step back and say, what is that impact it's having on your team when you're micromanaging, when you're letting that controller saboteur run the show? What's happening? Are you seeing that people are not really trying anymore? They're just waiting for you to tell them. And then if they're still kind of in that hijack state, they're saying, well, yeah, like if I don't tell them how to do it, it's not going to get done. And sometimes they actually take over and do the work for them because, if I don't do it, it's not going to get done right. So when we start hearing that voice, whether it's an internal dialogue or it's even coming out with me as a coach, there's probably some interference going on from a saboteur. So, I mean, on the other side of that is I have a saboteur called pleaser, right? And a lot of us in sort of that coaching, healthcare, service-oriented industry that pleaser shows up. Moms, we have a lot of moms have that quite strongly. My pleaser saboteur likes me to want people to like me. And so I will do things to not hurt their feelings, to make sure that they still like me. And so as a leader, how that will show up is, and I actually had a client the other day who was talking about this. She's like, I was asking her about her boss and how it was going. And she's like, oh, he's so great. He's so nice. He's so supportive. He's so wonderful. And he's always really great at giving positive feedback, but I just can't get past the fact that I feel like there's something he's not telling me. He's not giving me the negative feedback. He's not encouraging me to like, so ultimately that starts to create a lack of trust that you're just telling me what I want to hear. And as a leader, that's not great. Like you want to create a place where people are comfortable and they feel cared for. And at the same time, you don't want to be so nice and let that pleaser run the show. So a lot of times our strengths, and we hear this in a lot of ways, this isn't just a positive intelligence thing. Our strengths, when overplayed, become our weaknesses, right? So that is exactly what our saboteurs do. They take those things that we're really good at and they completely overplay them. So the pleaser is a great example, right? I have a strong pleaser. If I'm not hijacked, if I'm in a sage place, people feel safe with me. They feel comfortable. They feel cared for. I'm very tuned in to how everybody's feeling. And that's a really wonderful place to be. But my pleaser's like, oh yeah, let's make everyone feel really comfortable and forget about you and not tell them anything bad. And that's an overplayed strength, and it becomes that weakness that we just talked about. So all of those things as a leader, however it is that you're showing up, if those are overplayed and you're stressed, they're going to create an environment that will trickle through your team. So learning about that as a leader, dialing back into your strengths, your sageness, your saginess allows you to lead from a place of your strengths. And then your team, even if you just work on yourself, you'll start to see an impact within your team. And then you can start showing up in a way that is more authentic to you, and you're just not hijacked all the time. So I think I'll stop there for now.
No, I really appreciate that you made the comment that sometimes our greatest strengths can also be the thing that, can take us out at the knees sometimes if we don't have that awareness. I learned that a few years ago that I can be really great at bringing people together, but when, using the language of PQ, when I get hijacked, I will overcompensate and talk to the point where no one else has the opportunity to even get a word in edgewise. And that was something that I really like, I hadn't had an awareness to because no one had told me that that was happening. And then when I went back and I asked people, it didn't really seem to be something that people felt really negatively impacted by. But I think that the important part for me was the learning and bringing myself aware so that when I feel like I'm in that state, I already kind of know before it happens to kind of bring myself in and be like, okay, you're feeling a little nervous right now. I'm not exactly sure where that's coming from. And I don't really have the time to explore it, but I have the awareness that I am. So I need to kind of reel in the talking because I know that that's probably going to be the thing that's going to come out first. And I need to sort of reel it in. So I really appreciate that. I think that's a huge lesson. And to your point, I'm a people pleaser. I've shared that before. I've talked a lot about the difference between being kind and being nice. And I think that's, what you're talking about is when you're being nice, you're just sort of doing whatever anyone asks of you because you don't want anyone to be angry with you or upset with you or not like you. You can also be very, very kind with someone and still have those hard conversations that need to be had and not feel hijacked so that you can do it in a way that you feel emotionally grounded and that it's, a respectful conversation that's done with empathy. So you've mentioned three of the saboteurs, and I love hearing you talk about the saboteurs because it is like this like act of characters. Or what other ones are part of the PQ formula?
Yeah, so there are nine altogether, and plus a master saboteur, the judge. So that was the one I talked about. The judge, all of us have the judge. It's our number one. I always think of it as the puppet master, that it'll show up first. It'll be like, no, you're not smart enough. No, you're like, we all have a slightly different version of what our judge sounds like, but it's that berating voice that berates us and others. Right. So that judge shows up, and many of us know that, right? It's like you start, I had a client one time who used to say he was surrounded by idiots. So his judge was always like talking about how everyone around him were idiots. And that is 100% his judge voice. So interestingly, now he says, he said to me, like, I'm not surrounded by idiots anymore. I said, oh, have you like found new people? And he said, no, I just turned down my judge. So now I don't think that everyone else around me is an idiot because my judge has been sort of quelled and is now like a much kinder version of himself. So the judge is always there. And then the judge, I always picture the judge pulling in another saboteur depending on the situation. So we've talked about the controller, we've talked about the pleaser. So there's the hyperachiever. And you might say, well, Angie, who doesn't want to be an achiever? I want to be a high achiever. Yes, you do. There's nothing wrong with being an achiever. Hyperachiever is that saboteur and it's rampant really in our society. We see it all the time. It's the one that says, oh, you only got 95 out of 100. Where was the other five? Oh, we have to win at all costs. So we're pushing to win all the time. And again, winning isn't bad. It's when it becomes like that overplayed, stress-inducing, everything's about winning, nothing's about the journey. You actually win, you get to whatever it is you were striving for, and then you're not happy because, you don't stop and celebrate. There's still, now it's the next, like, what's the next bar? What have you done for me lately kind of approach. So hyperachiever shows up a lot, especially, I see it a lot in senior leaders for sure. Certain companies definitely hold that in high regard. It can show up a lot of you if you again, if you dial that back as a leader, if you have that hyperachiever saboteur, it means that when you're not hijacked, you can inspire great things from your team and yourself. When it's overplayed, your team starts to feel like they're winning for you and not for them. And they get resentful of that, right? It becomes, well, this is all about you. And, I love you, but now I don't love you anymore. So hyperachiever shows up a lot. Hyper rational, which in the engineering space, in the technical space, is very common because, again, the strength, somebody who has a hyper rational saboteur is very good with data, right? They can put all that stuff together. They can work the numbers. They love all of that, and everything can be solved with data. So that hyper rational starts to say, oh, no, emotions are messy. We don't need to deal with any emotions. Everything can be solved if we just have the right information. And so that can really start to play in relationships. And certainly as a leader, you have to understand that you're leading humans and humans have emotions, and you have to be able to understand and work with that. So empathy can be a hard thing. For those that have that. not saboteur. What else? I have an avoider saboteur as well. It's a nice combo with my pleaser saboteur. Avoider is that saboteur that says, avoids conflict. I don't want to upset people. It also shows up in avoiding tasks, right? Like something that's not that interesting, or, I get bored with it. So the avoider's like, well, it'll solve itself. And at the end of the day, it creates that anxiety that's like, no, that's not true. Either if you don't deal with that situation with somebody, it's going to come back and bite you. The work still needs to get done. It's not going to go away. So that avoider can really be a play. And as the leader, you can imagine the same sort of thing. Like you've got discord within your team, and if you don't step in to manage it, it's going to just get worse, right? It's going to blow up, and that avoider will hold you back from doing that. What else? Hypervigilance is another one. Again, that makes sense. Vigilance is good. Hypervigilance is anxiety inducing. It's the hand-wringing that happens all the time, worrying about absolutely everything that can go wrong. Victim is one that it's so interesting when it shows up, because most of us, I have it in my top three. Most of us who have victims somewhere in our top don't like to talk about it, right? It's kind of that one that's, everything happens to me. Nobody understands me. I'm different than everyone else. And so again, as a leader, you can imagine just how that can play for yourself and then also for your team, right? You're showing up for your team. Where am I at? How are you keeping track of how many I've said? I can't remember.
No, I lost track because I was so present and listening. And that's okay. I think that I really love hearing them. And the reason I asked you is because I think that most of us will resonate with at least one, if not several. Like I know I can see several of those in different aspects of my personality show up at different times. If someone is feeling the same way as me, where they're like, oh, I have that, and I have that, and I have that. Is there any way that they could try to identify which ones kind of rise to the surface most often? Like you said, you've got your top three. How did you figure out what your top three were? Like, what process did you go through to figure out what those top three were?
Yeah, well, I mean, the easiest is to take. There's an assessment that's available that's free, and that I have a link to that on my website. If you want to go ahead, anyone can take it. Go ahead and take that. So that is absolutely for sure will give you. It's a really quick assessment, and it'll give you a really good idea of your saboteurs. And the other thing that's interesting, Michelle, is that a lot of times. And this is something that I've learned as I deepen my knowledge in positive intelligence, and the more we work with people, is that the outcome, the behavior of, say, avoidance, let's use that. That's an easy one, the procrastination. And a lot of times when we're new to this work, we'll say, oh, well, if you procrastinate, because people will say, like a lot of people procrastinate, right? Like I think if you were to ask everyone, most people say they procrastinate at some time or another. Well, that means I must have an avoider saboteur. And then they do the assessment, and the avoider's way down at the bottom. So then they think something's wrong. The reality is, avoidance can be created by any of our saboteurs. And our saboteurs create avoidance for different reasons, or procrastination for different reasons. And so let's say, so the other one we didn't talk about is stickler. Stickler's like that perfectionist, everything has to be just right. And so where the procrastination shows up there is, I can't send this email until it's perfect, right? I'm not even gonna start do yeah, she's putting her hand up. I'm not even gonna do this until I know it's perfect, right? So that will create procrastination, because that stickler is saying, ooh, everything has to be exactly right, or I'm not gonna do it. So it can really like slow you down and create that sense of not moving forward. Hyperachiever that we already talked about. If I don't feel like I can win at this or be the best at this, I'm not even going to start. Right. So and so we see that. We see procrastination. Understanding who our saboteurs are can be really helpful. And ultimately, and this is where, go do the assessment. It's like it's helpful to understand. It's really, you're starting to build one muscle by understanding that you're being hijacked. What I find with clients is that, you know what, like the most important thing is identify that you're being hijacked. It does not matter who it is that's messing with you at this point. The fact is you're in this hijacked state of feeling frustrated, angry, anxious, you can say I'm being hijacked. And in the moment, it might be really obvious which one it is, but it may not be. And that's okay. But the first thing you need to do is shift yourself out of that, right? It's those rub your fingertips together, take a couple of breaths, feel your body in your seat, be present to your body. Then you can dial that down. And then I can move into this sage place of like the reflection of how you got hijacked and what caused it is like after the fact. It's a really good thing afterwards to come back to anticipating when those might show up, which is, by the way, one of our sage powers is, anticipating when our saboteurs are going to show up so that I can be prepared. If I know that when I come into a room full of people that I haven't met before, my judge immediately assumes that they're all smarter than me, even if there's no data to support that, right? I just make that assumption that as soon as people start talking, they're smarter than me. So I anticipate that now, and I just thank my judge for showing up and tell her to go sit down and move on with my day. So having that anticipation of those voices showing up can be really helpful as well. So so like getting that assessment can be helpful. It's probably the best way to do that. Talk to people, talk to coaches who do the work. But most of us that are trained in positive intelligence will have you do the assessment first to get the feel and then check in. Does this make sense? Does this feel, to date, I haven't had anyone say this doesn't resonate with me, right? If anything, they're kind of surprised that, even if they have one higher up and they're like, I don't understand what does this one mean? It doesn't make sense. And then we talk about it. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, I do have elements of that for sure.
Yeah. I'll include the link to that in the show notes so that everybody can go and link on that and go find out what their top three saboteurs are. And I really like the fact that, what you said was when you get yourself to a place where you feel you're not so hijacked and you're a little calmer, then you can kind of do the deep dive into sort of what's coming up for you. That happened to me a few years ago, and the one thing that I really was surprised by was that I always kind of came to this place of thinking that like the root cause is always going to be this internal angst or struggle that I have with myself, and like, what's the root cause? Why am I feeling so frustrated? And it was so funny because one day when I had this happen with this individual who sort of always just knew how to push my buttons, and I could never figure out what it was that made me always like preemptively get into this state of like, I'm just dreading this engagement. And it was always because the meetings that I had with this person were always at a certain time of day. Like it was a very consistent cadence. And I realized when I looked at it that it was 9 out of 10 times, it was because it was over a lunch and I hadn't eaten my lunch and I was starving and I was like preoccupied and I was hungry and I hadn't nourished my body and I was just frustrated that I was having to have this meeting over a lunch break. And once I started to be able to rearrange my schedule and actually give my body what it needed to kind of, and set myself up for success during that. So I'd have a little snack, get myself a cup of tea. And so my point in saying that is that I think that it's really important that we do the deep dive to figure out like what that root cause is. But it doesn't always have to be this huge epiphany. I mean, sometimes it's just literally because you haven't eaten and your body is telling you there's something, happening for me that, you haven't nourished your body in a way that allows you to stay in that place. What is that called? The hangry or whatever people call it. I don't want to minimize what you're saying in any way, but I think that sometimes we always, when we're on this journey, I was always looking for this big epiphany. And I've learned that sometimes it's the really subtle things that we miss in trying to get to the root of something because we're always looking for the big thing. And it's often the little pieces and the subtle shifts that we need to make to kind of come to that place where we now have more awareness and listen to our bodies. So thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll add to that. I think, it is important. All of these things, any of these tools that we have, are just that. They're tools. There's no one right answer, one right way to sort through this. What I can say is that figuring it out in the moment when you're frustrated, angry, whatever, hangry, all those things. You're not going to figure it out and solve it in that moment. I mean, we hear that all the time, right? Like, if you're having a disagreement or a challenge with your kid or your spouse or somebody at work, trying to like provide feedback and tell them like what you need or whatever that is in the moment when you're frustrated or hijacked is not the right time. So being able to look back on that. And I'm curious, Michelle, with that example you gave, that if yes, being nourished and fed and all that absolutely helps. If you were meeting with someone different, right, that you have a different relationship with, would there be less likely that you would get hijacked? And I think that's where what you brought up for me, we talk about how our saboteurs can be contagious and our sage can be contagious. So putting ourselves in a place where we're more likely to be sage no matter what, which includes nourishing our bodies, finding that place of like, what does sage look like for me? How do I make sure that I'm present and all of those things? And knowing that certain people, certain saboteurs, if someone is more hijacked themselves or they have certain saboteurs, they're more likely to engage my saboteurs. So I always think of it as like I can kind of picture this little war going on of these your saboteurs and my saboteurs, and they're just clashing. And the more work I can do to be sage myself, the more I turn down your saboteurs, and I'm not going to have that. So those things can be really valuable in understanding where that goes. I know for me, it's interesting because the hyper rational saboteur is probably the one that I find the most challenging. When I have a real visceral reaction to somebody, if I'm not kind of being careful and someone starts talking or engage with people, and I have this like a moment, and then I start dialing it back and we talk and figure it out, I'm like, oh yeah, hyper rational saboteur. There it is. It's that really, because I'm so in my strength, I'm so empathetic, I'm all about people. And somebody who's very number driven is very about numbers and not about emotion. And so those are very different approaches to life, right? So it's fine if we're both in that sort of a sage place. You can have that conversation. And as an engineer, I totally appreciate numbers and data. It's just that I'm a people first leader versus the numbers first. So yeah, it's all of those, back to your point, all of those pieces come together. And as long as we are not hijacked, we have the ability to actually sort through all that information and figure it out for ourselves. So that when we are hijacked, it's like, okay, I just need to get some food in me, and that might be enough. Or what else can I do to kind of sagify myself in that
Yeah.
moment?
No,
Yeah.
that makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate you asking the question because I do think that that's true. I think that if I was having a meeting with someone like you who brought the type of energy that you bring, I probably wouldn't have felt as hijacked and maybe more open to say to this person, I'm really hungry right now. Do you mind if I grab a snack while we're chatting? Would that, be offensive to you? I didn't feel like I could do that in that situation. So that's a really good point that I think that they're, could be a multitude of factors happening there and to be aware of that. So thank you for pointing that out. I noticed that on your website, you say that leaders have the key to unlock a culture that fosters trust, nurtures accountability, ignites purpose, and promotes exploration. And I'm wondering, I think you've already done this a little bit, but just to sort of bring some clarity around it, how does positive intelligence play a role in shaping team dynamics, and promoting collaboration and just helping teams to feel more cohesive?
Great question. Thanks, Michelle, for asking it. I think if so if we go back to each individual, starting with the leader. So if you picture, and we've all been in these environments probably, where if we now have a little bit of language around people being hijacked. So if you picture a room where everybody is more or less leading from their saboteur-driven place, and you've got all of them in the room, right? Everybody's judge is there. The leader is leading with their hyperachiever, and someone else is sitting back in the corner, and their avoider is making them just sit back and not engage. And then someone else's stickler is like trying to like get all the exact pieces of information. We didn't talk about restless, but that's the one that's like, moving from one thing to the next, and they're like driving the conversation all over the place, and all of those things. And we, those of us that have other skills like introversion, extroversion, being able to see that, all of that is at play too. So it's just kind of a massive saboteur driven conversation. there's a lack of trust because, we don't know that if I say something, someone's going to come in and cut me off and say you're wrong, and like this is the right way to do it. There's no other way to do it. I don't want to hear your idea. Someone else is, it's just messy, right? And so I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel safe. All those things that I know that are important to you too. So we've got a lack of trust. We've got a lack of safety because all of these saboteurs are the ones that are driving our behaviors and creating. We're already hijacked and feeling fearful because our saboteurs are coming from a place of fear, different kinds of fear: fear of not looking good to people, fear of losing, fear of getting it wrong, fear of somebody getting hurt, fear of all of these things. So when we can come in, and even as a minimum, if the leader has done some work to recognize their own saboteur-driven behaviors, and they do the work to say, okay, I'm going to show up more sage. I'm going to prepare myself for these conversations. I'm going to have different one-on-one conversations. I'm going to listen differently when I'm with my team. So right away, they're not feeding the other saboteurs, and they're creating this environment of empathy. I'm going to be aware of everyone's different. I'm going to ask different questions of the group when we're trying to solve a problem. There's tools through the positive intelligence work that help us ask questions differently. It's simple things like I say "and" instead of "but." I mean, we learn about that as leaders anyways, and that creates a more innovative, safe, creative space. So being able to see that as a leader can be really helpful. And then if you can, ideally, if the whole team can go through this kind of work together, so there is, the basic foundational program with positive intelligence is a 6 week, I call it a boot camp. So it's 6 weeks of really learning the program, learning about your saboteurs, practicing all these exercises that we can do in the gym, talking about the powers that our sage can bring to the table. If we do that as a team, you start to have language that you can talk about as a team. Everyone is sharing a little bit about what they're going through. You start to see that they all those. This is the thing, Michelle, that's really interesting is this doesn't replace all the good leadership tools that many of us have learned over our careers or we use as leadership coaches. It allows for something to go underneath that that's stickier. So you're trying to go through, I have a checklist, I have a formula for how I give feedback, right? This is, and there's all different ones out there, and none of them are bad. It's here's the feedback. But if I'm hijacked while I'm trying to give the feedback, or you're hijacked while you're trying to receive the feedback, I don't care how good the tool is. It doesn't land. It doesn't stick in the way that if you and I are in a sage place, if we're calmed down, our saboteurs are kind of mellowed down, then we can have this conversation. And the tool isn't as important anymore because we're going to have this conversation in a way that's more sage and more open and more curious. All of those things that we know are important. How do I get myself into this place of being curious, of being creative? Well, I acknowledge my saboteurs. I shift. I do a little bit of rub my, or maybe longer. If I know I'm going into a difficult conversation, maybe I take 10 minutes of actual PQ rep gym time before I go into that conversation.
Yeah.
I think
I
that
love
answered your
yeah,
question.
no, you totally answered it, and I love the how you call it the stickiness, because I do think that that's what sets PQ apart from, other modalities. And what I really loved when I learned about it from you and then started doing a little bit of my own research was that it really, I think, does a great job at incorporating like the neuroscience behind some of these reps, as you call them, to build these muscles so that people can understand that there's like a neural process that happens when we do these things or when we use these words, like you had said, instead of using but, you use and. If someone just tells you to do that as part of it, you'll be a better leader if you do this, but you never understand the physiology behind why that lands for people differently and how that promotes connection and trust and community with other people. Some people might think that's a stretch. However, when you understand what's going on in the brain and how those words matter, I think that it just has such a greater impact and level of awareness that it does put so much emphasis on your ability to use the different processes within the PQ model. I love it for that reason. I just think that it's a great bridge between those two pieces of the practice and the neurobiology around it. It does a great job at bringing those two together. And I think that when you can do that in a really great way, in the way that the program has, it allows you to feel as though this model is very accessible and it's easy to implement. And this is like, oh, this is something I can do. I can incorporate this in my everyday. Do you get that from people who take the program, or is this just sort of my experience that I'm feeling?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's always interesting to me because people will do the 6-week program and we always offer follow-up. I offer all kinds of things. I offer one-on-one coaching after I have an ongoing monthly call with some of my clients. And then if I'm working with teams, I offer monthly sessions with the team as well as coaching and all of that. And some of them do take it on, and I get to see the growth, and I get to see how they respond differently to things. And they'll tell me on the regular, and we'll talk about how to approach things from that Sage operating system. And other times, people will take the 6 weeks and say, "Okay, thanks, Angie, that was great." And then I don't see them again. And then some number of months later, and they're like, "Oh, I want to tell you some stories about how I use this operating system." Or, a friend of mine recently, she's a VP at a big oil and gas company. She's been doing some big presentations recently, facilitating these full day sessions. And she said, people have asked me just before I actually take the stage to do my presentation, I will stand, and she does that sort of superwoman pose that we talk about, like the power pose. And she said, "I do that, but I also I close my eyes and I feel my toes and I breathe and I feel the breathing in my body and all the things that I learned from you in the positive intelligence work." And people ask me, "What are you doing?" And she said, "Well, I'm doing these things." And so she finds that every time she goes into those kinds of environments, she's using those PQ muscles in a different way. And so yeah, absolutely. I think, people, I get calls or they're like, "Okay, I can tell that my kid is hijacked. How do I help them? I can see the saboteurs in other people. How do I help them? How do I do that?" So that language and that ability to now see and sense when you're hijacked and when others are, it just gives them a different way of approaching, again, using those tools they already have. And using it in a way that's like, okay, pull that tool off the shelf. You have access to that. Make yourself more sage before you apply it. And that, see how that makes a difference in terms of how you interact with people.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate that a lot. I always like to give people who are listening sort of a nugget that they can maybe take away and try. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions on maybe one small action that someone could do to kind of dip their toe into the PQ world that might help them in both their personal and professional life to start incorporating some of these PQ approaches. Is there a small thing that someone could incorporate in their everyday life that would be helpful?
Yeah, there's lots of great questions. I mean, I think doing the assessment and having that awareness is a really great first step. And then, starting to recognize, to be able to say, "Oh, I'm feeling this way. I'm feeling hijacked," around that. And so I think find something that you can go into your body for a really short period of time. So we talked about a few of them. I can go through a couple of them just to get people thinking about it. Is notice your breathing, right? And I mean, this is not new. This is not a PQ specific thing. We all know this. To take that moment and find a way into your body, notice the breathing. Some people really like to notice as you breathe in through your nose and out through your nose, the temperature difference, right? And sometimes, I mean, it might depend on where you live. Where I am in Calgary, and when I go outside right now and I can breathe in, and that breath in is cool and the breath out is warm, really noticing that, that just takes you into your head for a moment. I think I mentioned one of my favorites is feeling my feet on the floor. The weight of your body in your seat, just going into your body and noticing that can be really impactful. You know, as you're out and about, so here's the thing, you can build those muscles in the moment, which can be really hard, or you can start, it's like going to the gym. If you lift weights, you're going to start building your muscles. Then when you need them, they're there to use. So things like when you're washing your hands, right? Feel the temperature of the water. Notice the bubbles of the soap as you're washing your hands, right? Notice that sensation of your hand rubbing together. So that, and again, how long does that take? How long are we supposed to wash our hands for?
About
Nurse
90
Michelle.
seconds.
Yeah. So 90 seconds of watching those things and feeling, rather than just like doing your ABCs or whatever it is, like actually notice that sensation. As you're standing and waiting for your coffee to percolate, listen to that sound of the percolating coffee. Really notice the sound. Notice the, you know, like depending on what cup you have, I love to wrap my hands around my cup and feel the warmth and feel the texture. And all of those things are so good for your mental fitness, muscles in your brain. So, and I encourage people to be creative, find the ones that work for them. I had a client who he's like, you know, when I walk around, he goes up for a walk at lunch and I walk around my property, I really started noticing how when it's windy, how one side of my face I can feel the wind and the other side I don't feel it. Or I can feel the wind through my fingers as it blows. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. I don't mind the wind so much anymore since you told me about that, because as soon as it gets windy, instead of getting frustrated, I just notice it and how it feels on my body. So
Yeah.
those kinds of things can be really, really helpful.
Thank you. Those are really good ones. I know that our time is quickly coming to an end, sadly, and I'm wondering if we could do a couple of rapid fire questions about you.
Sure.
You don't need
Let's
to be
do it.
afraid. And the good thing is that you get to set the rules. So, you can answer these however you choose.
Course.
The first question I have for you is, what lights you up and makes you feel sustainable?
Question. I think conversations like this, I mean, we talked about this, our clubhouse calls in the mornings on Thursdays, having and what I've realized is that knowing that I create that space for people, right? That you know, my ability to connect dots, draw threads between what everybody's saying, and come out feeling like I know more than I did when I started, and not and just being surrounded by people and knowing that I can draw that out of them. I mean, that just lights me up. If I could have those conversations and be paid for those conversations every day, I would, it would be amazing.
Yeah,
So,
that would be amazing. I completely agree with you. Is there a person who's made a big influence in your life and why?
I should have been prepared for this question. I mean, there are a lot of people. I have a lot of leaders that I've worked with over my career. I think this work, this positive intelligence work, I watch Shirzad as a leader of this organization, and he embodies this work, and he shows us, we get to have Zoom calls with him monthly, and we watch him work through it himself. He's not perfect. He's still trying to get there. And so for him to embody that and show it, and it's infusing through his organization, I find that really compelling for me in terms of showing up as a leader, showing up with vulnerability, practicing. It's been very inspiring to work with someone like that. So yeah, that's one anyways for today.
Yeah, good. Thank you. And do you have a favorite quote or a book that you've read that you feel has really kind of impacted you?
There's always quotes there. There isn't one that comes to mind right now. I think one of the first books that I read that sort of took me on this path, like maybe list a couple if that's okay. Certainly, Simon Sinek start with why. I've done a lot of work around that. More recently, I read a book called Trust and Inspire by Stephen M. R. Covey. He's the son of Stephen Covey. That book really resonates with me in terms of the, what sage leadership looks like, what a mentally fit leader would look like. So yeah, and then of course anything by Brené Brown. I have
Yeah.
a whole list
So do
of
I. That's
books
another
by
reason why
her.
we get
Yeah.
along so well. Because I always said to people here, I'm like, in my world, Brené Brown and I are best friends. She just doesn't know that yet. But in my world, that, she's on speed dial and, we're besties. So yeah, I.
Totally. I listened to her podcast like during the first part of the pandemic. Every time I took the dog for a walk, I'd have listening to her. So yeah, you start to feel like you know somebody. And then my favorite podcast, like, and I wish I could have been part of the conversation with her, Adam Grant, and Simon Sinek all talking together.
Yep.
And those are three of my favorite people to either read their books or listen to them on their podcasts. So yeah, that would be, if I could sit down and have dinner with anybody, it would be the three of them.
Yeah. What I loved about that podcast so much was that they did such a great job wanting to hear about what the other two had to say about the subject. So it was like just this really fun sort of banter back and forth and listening to each other. It wasn't one of them didn't sort of take over the conversation. They were just so gracious. And to me, to your point, that just showed me that they're actually living in the work that they talk about and that they put out into the world, that they're really like walking that and breathing it themselves. There was just such a sense of humility in that conversation and fun, which made it so much more enjoyable to listen to. So yeah, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that one. It's been about 6 or 7 months, so thank you for reminding me of that.
Of course, of course.
Yeah. What do you need to lead others well?
I need to continue to do this work for myself. I need to continue to look after to I know that when I haven't done my kind of mental fitness gym work every day, I show up differently. So I need to continue to do the work every day for myself.
Well, I think you're pretty awesome, so thank you.
Thanks, Michelle.
Is
Ditto.
there a final thought that you wanted to leave our listeners with today?
Just thank you for allowing this conversation to happen. I believe that we all have this capability of being sage, and and it looks different for each of us. A sage leader is one that is working on their mental fitness, and there is no one perfect vision of what that looks like. I think that's one of the cool things about where we're headed with a new, and you're on this journey with me in terms of a new way of leading, a new style of leadership. And so it's not, you can't draw a picture like we used to be of like this, this is what a good leader looks like. A good leader is leading from their strengths, and that means they have to have turned down their saboteurs. They have to be tapping into their sage powers, and that allows them to lead from a different place. So
Yeah. Where can people go to learn more about you and the amazing work you're doing?
Thanks. Well, LinkedIn is probably the easiest place. So if you look up Angie Alexander PEng, so that's professional engineer. I still hold that status along with my mental fitness coaching certification. And then my website is sageleaderconsulting.com. Those are
Yeah.
kind of the easiest. I'm also on Instagram. Not we were talking before we started about not as much on Instagram as I am, LinkedIn. I'm probably the most consistently on. And of course, Clubhouse. Come find us Thursday mornings on the House. So
Yeah.
that's 9 a.m. No, what time is that? 8 a.m. Mountain, 7 a.m. in your world,
Yeah.
every Thursday morning. So always love to have folks
And
there
we have
too.
lots of listeners from the US, so wherever you are, come find us on Clubhouse Thursday mornings. Yeah. Thank you. On your
Great.
website, I was reading some of the testimonials that people have said about the work that you do, and I read one. I won't say who it's from. You can go find out if you want yourself. But this person said, recently I worked with Angie on a team charged with improving employee engagement after a significant asset sale and subsequent staff reduction, which drastically changed the nature of the organization. And she did a wonderful job facilitating the discussion, navigating the raw emotions, and guiding the group towards an actionable plan. I've observed Angie facilitate numerous group discussions and working sessions. She is a gift for guiding groups with a variety of disciplines and personalities through the decision-making process. Her broad oil and gas experience and knowledge of the industry provides her with an excellent balance of soft skills and technical knowledge. So I just wanted to highlight that if you have felt inclined to reach out to Angie, please do, because she's doing incredible things. And I just wanted to highlight one of many of the testimonials you have on your site. So thank you again for coming today.
Thanks for having me. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, I say this to every guest, and I will continue to do so, that I believe that our time and energy are two of the greatest gifts that we have to give, and we often give them very easily. But it is always humbling to me that people come and pour into this community and give me both of those unconditionally. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been great.
Yeah. And thank you everyone for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing and leaving a review, or leave a comment on what you enjoyed from the podcast episode. And if you have any suggestions for future episodes, I'd love to hear from you. Even better, please share it out with a friend or a colleague and turn on your notifications so that you never miss an episode. It really does help our podcast gain more listeners so that we can grow our Lead From Within community. Thanks again, everyone, and keep reaching for your highest branch. Thanks for tuning in to the Lead From Within podcast. For more information on leadership, employee engagement, and self-care, you can follow me on Instagram, Curis Consulting. Curis is spelt C-U-R-I-S, so that's Curis_consulting. Click on the Linktree link at the top of my bio for a free discovery call with me and to get some free downloads. You can also join the Lead From Within Facebook group, or you can visit my website at www.curisconsulting.ca. If you feel inspired to, go ahead and subscribe to the podcast and leave a comment. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thanks again for tuning in, and see you in the next episode.